Blog Talk Radio.
Are we bamboozled? Only building a global African cooperative solves the riddle. What's the riddle? We'll tell you when we come back. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join the conversation, call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Ongti, who, like me, is a member of ULU. Peace, Brother Ongti. How are you?
Greetings, Sister Q. I am just fine. Good to hear your voice, and good to have a chance to share with the ULU family one more time.
It's good to have you here, and it's good to hear you as well. So, to begin, Brother Ongti, you are asking the question, are we being bamboozled? Present tense. What is the problem that leads you to ask that question?
Well, thank you, Sister Q. Like many of us watching the news, we as Black people find ourselves confronted by escalating police and white vigilante terrorism. We're also Black voter repression bills by Republicans are on steroids as 47 states and counting race to pass legislation interfering and blocking black people's access to the ballot. The COVID-19 pandemic has revealed the depth of the black health crisis, and global warming-induced severe weather events continue lashing the country. What we have to understand is that all of these conditions are symptoms of a dying political and economic system called capitalism. Sister Q, I think that's important because we find ourselves divided. It's kind of like we're playing guacamole, you know. On the one hand, we have these police shootings of black people, and no sooner than we try to rally to deal with that, then there are all of these states coming forward with these egregious voter repression bills. We're trying to deal with that. We see global warming, the weather events that are being spawned by that sweeping across the country and around the globe, and we are almost out of breath trying to figure that out.
Yeah, for sure.
At the same time, the pandemic is still raging in parts of the world and even in this country. And mm-hmm. so all of these fires are raging at the same time, and it seems like it's hard to figure out what do we do. I want to suggest mm-hmm. that each of these conditions are but symptoms of a dying economic and political system called capitalism. And you notice as different groups are forming around different issues. So we're talking about police reform, or we're
right.
talking about passing H.R. 1 to, you know, the John Lewis Voter Rights Bill. But nobody is talking about moving away from this rapacious capitalist economic and political system and creating a better system. What we would argue is an African global cooperative economic system for the planet. That, in the final analysis, we think is the solution facing our people. So I'll pause there, and you may have a reaction to that, or there may be questions. So
yeah, well, because what you were saying is there's so many things going on, and people, even among our community, are taking different sides on almost each one of those items and everything else, so that it becomes difficult for us to come together cohesively, you know. So the fact that you are offering a whole nother venue to, like, don't even focus on each one of these little symptoms, deal with the whole problem. And I think if we were to do that, then we could say, okay, we know what the problem is. Let's now solve the problem rather than, go off on tangents with each one of these little symptoms, which, you know, you could put a Band-Aid on the symptom, but that won't solve the problem, because another problem
exactly.
would be presented by the same people who mm-hmm. are presenting all these other mm-hmm. problems.
I'm glad you phrase it that way, because really what we find ourselves caught up in is the divide and conquer playbook that has been thrown at us since we've been captured and brought here. But just for an example, when we talk about police violence and white vigilante terrorism against black folks, mm-hmm. police departments got their start, particularly in the South. These were the slave patrols that were sent to capture runaway slaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then as the country developed, these slave catchers became the sheriff and the sheriff's deputies, so that
mm-hmm.
many of the police departments across the country have their origin in controlling and patrolling black bodies so that white folks could maintain control over black labor. So, you know, it's almost impossible to reform the system when at its very core, it was always about inflicting violence and terror against black people as a way of controlling our behavior. Similarly, when we talk about global warming, in order to correct that, we've got to get off of fossil fuels, off of the oil and the gas and the nuclear power. And even though the solar and the wind and other forms of renewable energy are available, and now they are even cost effective because the controlling elites, their money is tied to the oil and the gas. They're not interested in shifting to solar, because if we shift to solar as a country and as a planet, the people who used to make their money every time you and I pull up to the gas tank and fill up our cars, they know that that ka-ching process is about to come to a screeching halt. So, again, that's the capitalist piece interfering with us coming forward with a sane solution to this very serious problem of global warming. And then if we talk about black health, the crisis in black health, if COVID-19 reveals anything, it reveals that black folks, because we have this series of underlying conditions, whether it's heart disease, diabetes, Alzheimer's, cancer, stroke, all of these conditions were exacerbated by COVID-19 and put us at an even greater risk than the rest of the population. Well, there's an interesting book for those who would be interested in looking at it called The China Study. It was put out in 2006 by Dr. Colin Campbell. And one of the things that he showed was that it's the overconsumption of animal protein that is at the root of heart disease, the root of cancer, the root of diabetes. When people transition their diet from this excessive animal protein intake to a vegetable protein intake, the diabetes goes away in 2 weeks. You know, for people to be on metformin for 20 years is just the way the system is designed. It's not designed to cure us or to make us healthy. It's designed to maximize profit. And so we have been that profit center. And and so as a result, our health has suffered tremendously. And when you look at the statistics, more people die from heart disease and cancer and diabetes than die from COVID. But you don't see the political system saying, okay, we're going to transition the population off of animal protein onto vegetable protein. That's not a solution.
Right.
No, we're going to come up with a virus, with a vaccination where we still can make billions and billions of dollars.
Right.
So,
Yeah.
So we that's where I say, are we being bamboozled? Because we're being led to believe that the solution is police reform. The solution is pass H.R. 1, the John Lewis Voting Rights Bill. The solution is take the vaccine. The solution is, carbon credits or cap emission kinds of things, when the solution really is we've got to change the economic system. We've got to get off of capitalism and onto an African global cooperative economic model. Now, nobody's talking about that, and I wonder why.
Well, you know, it's interesting you were talking about what I call the disease management system, because I remember seeing years ago an article where they had done a survey on black people living in the South, and they found that they were very healthy, you know, even healthier than people living in the North. And one of the things they found out is that they ate a lot of beans and like rice. They ate meat, but not big slabs of meat. Just they might put something in a pot to season the beans or greens or whatever, just a little bit. And right after that is when they came out with the food stamp program so that these people could afford to eat more meat. They already mm-hmm. knew that putting them on a heavy meat-based diet would, or making more meat available to them and then pushing it on TV or whatever the way they advertise it, then that would encourage people to feel that that's what they needed to be eating. And it was from there
right.
that the health of Black people really started going down. And we
mm-hmm.
hear that you
right.
know, diabetes is so prevalent among us, but 100 years ago, a little more than 100, like in the early 1900s, they couldn't find a case of diabetes among Black people in America. So
right.
we have to think that this is a plan and a process to get as because capitalism needs return customers, that it was deliberately done to make people sick enough
right.
to have to come to them. And they start them out, you know, with the prenatal care and the well baby clinics. You start sticking that stuff in them. So, brother,
right.
Auntie, you had mentioned a riddle. What is the riddle that you were talking about?
Well, I'm glad you said that, Sister Q. I said only building a global African cooperative solves the riddle. And what I mean by that, to answer your question, is I suspect, I know that I've wondered about this many times myself, especially
mm-hmm.
the more I read of our history and how advanced African civilizations were prior to Europeans coming onto the continent. Many of us have wondered, how is it possible that we who are the original inhabitants of the planet, we were the first builders of civilization, we were the people who gave math, science, engineering, philosophy, religion, music, dance to the world. How is it that
mm-hmm.
a people that advanced, we now found ourselves under the heel of people who are bestial and ignorant? And
mm-hmm.
and we've been languishing in that condition for the last 500 years. How could that have happened? And given the advanced wisdom and understanding of our people, I'm of the opinion that our ancestors saw this coming. They saw the European incursions onto the African continent. I won't say that they engineered it, but I would say that they understood, at the very least, they set it in motion. And why? When we dig deep into African thought,
mm-hmm.
they understand that there is a polarity to life. In other words, everything has its opposite, and
mm-hmm.
and the engine that drives life and activity on the planet is this interplay of opposites. And so on the one hand, we've got melanated people who come with this high degree of intelligence and genius and creativity. And then we have these non-melanated folks who are imitators and bestial and just downright ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
And yet and still, we've been captured by this negative energy, so to speak. I believe
okay.
that our ancestors were confident that we could solve the riddle of white supremacy capitalism. In other words, in looking at African pedagogy, that is the methods that Africans use to educate their children and their societies, they believed in a problem-posing mechanism. In other words, they didn't give the answers to the children. Rather, they gave the children or the students a problem to solve, a riddle or a puzzle, and then they just sat back because they knew they had already given them the principles that govern the universe and said, they'll work it out. They'll figure it out. And so
okay.
the riddle for us is white supremacy capitalism. All right, that's this global system of domination that has ensnared our people around the planet. How do we throw that off? You know, what is the way out of this insanity? And I would say that the answer, and that's why I said that an African global cooperative economic system is the solution. In other words, because we are the first people and we came with the first philosophical explanations for why the universe is the way that it is and what the relationship of people on the planet are to one another and to the Creator, that we have to come forward with a philosophical framework that can reorganize the entire world. So we're not just talking about putting up a mom-and-pop store on this corner or in that neighborhood. We are talking about reorganizing the economic and political life of the entire planet. Now, that may sound kind of grand, and for sure that it is, but that's precisely the position that we find ourselves in as a people. We cannot survive under capitalism. We cannot survive under European socialism. We have to come forward with an African economic system that embraces our genius and our wisdom and shows the world how to use the resources of the planet, how to engage one another, and how to move the entire human family to a higher level of existence. That's the challenge that's on us as a people. And as I said, our ancestors are quite confident that we can figure it out. And the key is we have to look within. The solutions, the answers, everything that we need lies within African consciousness. But if we are denying that we are African, if we are bending over backwards, breaking our necks, trying to be African American or black or, heaven forbid, Negro, if we run away from the best of what we are, that is what is holding us back from coming forward with a solution. Let me pause there. You may want to make a comment.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, if we deny our ancestors, we can't really expect them to help us solve the puzzle.
Exactly.
So, you know, they put the riddle for us, and they also are available to help us answer it, whether we know that or not. So, we got to be careful
with
that.
And what you said is so profound, because it's even in our ancient wisdom, the idea that the ancestors are available to talk to us. You know, Europeans come in there and they say, these people, they believe in ghosts. They talk to their ancestors. They talk to, you know, and they make fun of that. Mm-hmm. But our culture understood quite clearly that getting quiet and invoking the presence of the ancestors and asking them for solutions is part of how we find our way forward, because we are our ancestors. So, again, our higher philosophy and cosmogony and the way that we understand how the world is put together is part of the solution that we have to bring forward. And the only way we can do that is by reclaiming the truth that we are African. And that's where people stumble, you know, why we gotta be African. And the only reason we say that is because most of us have had it beat into our heads that the only thing that Africans did was run around half-dressed with bones in their nose. You know, now we've come a long way from then, because I remember as a little boy watching cartoons and Tarzan and all these, white figures swinging through the trees in the jungle and, was my earliest. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that, you know, like we according to the movies, we lived in the jungles, but we needed a European to come and tell us how to cooperate with the nature that was right there.
Yeah.
A guy from Europe, you know, knew better how to deal with the animals and deal with the nature set right there than the people that had grown and established the ecosystem with those animals and plants. So,
right.
Brother Auntie, I'm going to invite people to join our conversation. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 929-477-2789. Press 1 on your phone to make a comment or to ask a question. And if you're on your computer, you can go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the home page, click on the Dare to Win button, and then click on Listen Live. We don't have any questions right now, Brother Auntie, so what I would do is go to a music break right quick, and then we'll be back so you can give us some more good news.
Okay. See you on the other side of the break.
Okay, welcome back to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday evening radio program. Brother Auntie, we have someone who wants to ask you a question or make a comment. So I'm going to go ahead and open the mic for that now. Okay, phone number ending in 8912. State your name and where you're calling from, please, and make your question or comment.
Greetings, family. This is Brother Thurman calling from Richmond, Virginia. And thank you so much for this topic. It's very vital. And Brother Auntie, you mentioned thing you said is very valuable. And you mentioned a few minutes ago that the subject about the capitalism and European socialism, and then you talked about the cooperative economic, you know, that's in our ancestry, our original economic model. So I was just so touched that you said European socialism, because a lot of our revolutionaries in the past were advocating this socialism, that a lot of it was European socialism. And you've got so much bringing that you brought forth already. I think we need to have you come back, but and if necessary, you come back and expand on this European socialism. But that's a very serious issue that people need clarity on as you bring us forward about this cooperative economics and solving that riddle. And I'll just get off the line and listen to your report.
Thank you, Brother.
Yes, thank you, Brother Thurman. Good to hear your voice. And thank you for raising that question, because that's a great segue to talk about the African blueprint to rebuild the global African economic cooperative. Before I jump to that, though, I do want to make one point. Oftentimes, when we say African culture, African wisdom, African technology, people don't fully understand that. And they see a lot of things going on the African continent, and it's backward, and it is backward. When we in Us Lifting Us talk about African wisdom and this ancient technology, we are talking about these fundamental principles that our ancestors, from observing the universe, begin to glean that this is how the world is set up. So, for example, I don't know how many of us have had a chance to travel to what is now called Egypt. It was Kemet, that's what the people who lived there originally called it, and to witness the pyramids. I had a chance on a couple of occasions to go, but even because my background was not as informed as it is now, I didn't fully understand the significance of that grand pyramid at Giza in Egypt. But here's what I want to say. The technology that was required to build that edifice was so precise and the measurements were so accurate that even engineers and the brightest minds in Europe and America today do not know how to duplicate the building of that pyramid. In other words, their technology does not help them to understand how those ancient people did it. It doesn't even fully grasp the mathematics that are represented in that structure, its alignment with the stars. They are just baffled by the genius it took to construct those pyramids. And most exciting of all to me is the pyramids were standing in 2500 BC. So before Abraham and the quote-unquote Israelites had anything to do on the planet, before the Greeks, before anybody came on the scene, 2500 BC, Africans have already put their masterpiece on the planet. And so
right.
When we talk about building an African economic model on these ancient African concepts of economy, we are talking about the most powerful science that the world is still to discover. So I want to draw some information from an ULU member. His name is Paul Ifeyomi Grant. He wrote a book called Ifowo Sowopo Economics, and he is intentional about using a Swahili title because he's making an argument about how important it is to speak in an indigenous language. So the first thing, before we can talk about currency and money and cowrie shells and the value of this and the value of that, the first thing that has to be established in a community, in a nation, amongst the people, is what are the guiding principles and values that set out how people behave one to another. And so in his structuring of an economy that black people can implement both here in the States and around the globe, he lays out 4 to 5 critical ideas that are important. And I want to share those right now, Sister Q. The first thing he says is there must be an acknowledgement and recognition that the most fundamental aspect of existence is spirit, and that this should underpin all forms of interaction within the African world. Now, I wanted to get to that point because it speaks directly to the question that Brother Thurman raised a minute ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What European capitalism and European socialism have in common, and what makes those two systems inadequate for African folk, is their principal fundamental aspect of existence is material. Do you see the difference?
Mm-hmm.
African
yes,
says
very different.
That the fundamental aspect of life is spirit. Europeans say it's matter. In other words, if I can't see it, touch it, feel it, smell it, whatever, it ain't real. Africans
right.
say, well, you're going to be real limited. Because before anything physical exists, it first existed in the spirit realm. And mm-hmm. so what Brother Grant is saying to us is we have to rebuild ourselves from these ancient principles. And the first thing is we have to acknowledge that the fundamental aspect of existence is spirit. So that's point number one.
Mm-hmm.
The second point is the view that the earth is a living organic organism that must be treated with respect. I would also say, and with reverence, so
mm-hmm.
that Europeans, whether we're talking in the capitalist mode or the socialist mode, they view the planet as something that to be exploited, to resources to be extracted.
Mm-hmm.
Africans say, "Whoa, slow down, back up! This planet that we live on is alive." It is a living being, and we are in relationship with it, and how we comport ourselves has to do with how successful we are going to be staying here. And keep in mind that these African civilizations existed for 10, 20, 30,000 years. You know,
mm-hmm.
here, Europeans have been in charge for a little over, 1,500 years. They about to blow the planet up. So the second point that I think he lifts that's very important for us is to understand that the earth is a living organism. So in other words, well, let me get to the third point too, the understanding that human beings are custodians, trustees, guarantees, guardians of the land, and therefore, and listen to this, the land cannot be owned. It can only be utilized for the benefit of society. So this notion of, driving a stake in the ground and putting up a fence and say, I own this, Africans say,
mm-hmm.
are you must be from another
yeah.
planet. First of all, take the stick out of the land. You know, we don't, that's a living being. And if you're going to do anything to the land, you first need to get permission from the land. So there's rituals in place to communicate with nature, with Mother Nature, or with,
mm-hmm.
In other words, they had a very different way of conceptualizing the planet. And because of that, all indigenous peoples, whether we're talking Native Americans, whether we're talking about South Americans, whether we're talking about Australia, whether we're talking about Asia, all indigenous people saw themselves as earth keepers, as
mm-hmm.
as protectors of the water, of protectors of the air, and they understood that land was to be used, but it could not be owned, it could not be sold. It
right.
was used for the benefit of the group, for the society, for the nation. And because we have gone so far away from that, we're doing all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why we're experiencing this crisis of global warming, because we have violated the very being of the planet herself. Mm-hmm. The next principle that he shared is the recognition of the vital role played by women in the economy, whether paid or unpaid, and the determination to attribute appropriate value and support to caregiving and other essential roles traditionally undertaken by women. So that in the ancient understanding, this was vital work. Women are the carriers of life as it comes onto mm-hmm. the planet, and how mm-hmm. that life is nurtured and prepared, and the first teachers, you can't place a value on that, but you
for
have
sure.
to build it in such a way that they are treasured and honored for the contributions that they make to the well-being of the society. He goes on to say the recognition, and this is the final point. He makes 12 or so. I'm only lifting up these because I think they really give a flavor of how we have to change our way of thinking about this. And he says mm-hmm. The recognition of the family in its widest African sense as the foundation of society, and hence the need to build economics that supports the functionality and integrity of this institution, I mean, this of the family. In other words, that is why we, in Us Lifting Us, we talk about what we are doing as Ujamaa Economics, family-centered, group-owned, collective ownership of the means of production of these enterprises that we are organizing. And so because we see ourselves not as just business associates, we mm-hmm. really see ourselves as sisters and brothers in a family. And
right.
if we don't engender that sense of familyhood, we will ultimately take advantage of one another. We will wind up exploiting each other. We will wind up competing against each other to see who got the most whatever, and it will destroy healthy community. And,
right.
and I think Sister Q, many of the people on the call tonight are old enough to remember back during segregation that one of the advantages is that when we all were forced to live in the same space, in the same neighborhoods, in the same localities, the doctor,
mm-hmm.
the minister, the garbage worker, the teacher, everybody lived in the same locale. We knew one another. We supported each other. We played together. We grieved together. And we had a healthy connection. One of the disadvantages of when integration came along and everybody scattered, you know, now we live in expensive subdivisions. You drive in, hit your button, the garage door goes up. You drive in your garage, hit the button, the door comes down, boom. You may not
right.
see anybody for the next 48 hours.
Yeah. Brother Ongti, we have a couple of people with their hands raised, so I'm going to
okay.
go ahead and take these calls and comments. Caller with the number 3440, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Yes. Greetings and good evening, Brother Ongti and Sister Q. Very, very stimulating program tonight. I just wanted to add, Brother was talking about earlier about the importance of mother and spirituality in our culture. I just wanted to give a couple examples just to reinforce that that's still prevalent, even though some people might be bombarded by the materialism and capitalistic principles that flow through us. So, and one of those, just to give you an example, we oftentimes for, you know, Africans here who are fed up, and we often use the term, we want to repatriate, you know, to Africa. Well,
mm-hmm.
it was it was educated to me. No, we're not repatriating. We are rematriating. Because we refer to Africa as Mother Africa, you know, not Father Africa, but Mother Africa. Again, the importance of womanhood and motherhood. I also remember in visiting a couple areas when I was on the continent and learned that, in fact, I learned this after just before I went while I was still in industry. Every once in a while, the Europeans would give briefings on their research and stuff like that, and it was just happened to be one researcher who talked about a process, you know, for the creation of steel and iron, iron from the ore, and that Africans had practiced this for centuries before the Europeans got a patent on the process. So what was interesting is that one elder who was going to reignite a blast furnace never done it before in his life. He was just remembering what was passed down to him from his father and grandfather. He didn't know anything. I mean, he had not seen it done. They instructed him on how to do it. And so he went and created this blast furnace, but, you know, during the process, you know, they had some stumbling because they were just taking the material from the environment and creating this blast furnace. Eventually they got it where they produced the kind of ore, the material that they wanted. But what was very important was what Brother Auntie referred to before. During the process, when things didn't work out, the village went and prayed to the ancestors and the gods. All right, the spirit, everything was spiritual. All right, in other words, did we do something wrong that angered the ancestors? Did we not follow their directions correctly? And my last example, and I get off, you talked about COVID. What a lot of people here don't realize is that there are particularly lawsuits going around because of the imposition of what some are saying is a falsehood, which is, when I say falsehood, that the pandemic is not much of a pandemic in terms of what Brother Auntie said earlier, the disposition of our health, which is affecting us tremendously much more so than we find in other people. Well, anyway, interestingly, some of the Europeans are fighting some of the draconian lockdowns, and they're taking lawsuits. A lot of the lawsuits are in Europe. But what I found out recently was that there are some lawsuits that are materializing in Southern Africa by African lawyers. Now, what was interesting is that these German, and Belgian and American lawyers were impressed what the African lawyers knew about the subject, but what was really interesting is that how they got the community together and the community prayed for strength. All right, again, bringing in the spirituality. All right, so brother, you're right on with what you're saying. It runs through us, and I just wanted to give those examples of while you were speaking that we can't run from the spirituality. The gold, the copper, you know, the electronics, the iPhone, all that stuff is going to be here. But everything else, the foundation, all right, is the spirit. So thank you so much for letting me share that.
Thank you very much for your comments. I'm going to there's one more call for the auntie.
Yeah. That was rich, Brother Shabaka. Thank you.
Okay, caller number 5663, please state your name, where you're calling from, ask your question, or give your comment. Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. This is Mabantu Akawanda, the Decatur, Georgia. And I just wanted to, thank you, Brother Auntie, for your presentation tonight. It's just triggered some things. Especially when you talked about the pyramids and what have you, and I'm just wondering if You have seen the movie Great Pyramid K 2019 because it explicitly talks about how the statues were actually put together, how the pyramids were actually put together. Have you seen that movie?
What's it called, Sister Nabantu?
It's called Great Pyramid K 2019. It's on YouTube.
I have not seen that.
Yeah,
2019?
It's Great Pyramid K, like just the letter K, 2019.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
Brother Oshie on his show has been doing a lot of discussions around this film, a lot of reviews. I haven't actually seen it, but I've heard from the different people on this show talk about it, how profound it is in terms of how actually these pyramids and statues were made. So I'm going to look at it. I'm just sharing it with the audience here tonight. And I have mm-hmm. an uncle named Earl Grant who did, he's a mathematician, and he did a lot of work on Kemet. And he has references that show that the European writers have said that the ancient Egyptians started studying astronomy 50,000 years ago. That's coming out of
mm-hmm.
their research.
Mm-hmm.
And also, first African people to come out of Africa, they said, came out 1 million years ago. And there's a lot
mm-hmm.
of references to well. So I just wanted to share that, and thank you for
mm-hmm.
bringing that up. All right. Thank you
mm-hmm.
for allowing me.
Thank you,
thank
Mama
you.
Nabantu. I will certainly look at that that YouTube clip. The other thing I would share, Sister Q and others on the call, and you probably already have it in your library, but if you don't, Anthony Browder's contributions of Nile Valley contributions to civilization.
Mm-hmm.
He has a chapter on the pyramids that goes into the math and its position these are the stars. You really have to sit and marinate with that information until it really sinks in how advanced the mathematicians and engineers were in building those pyramids and how exact they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a variation of less than a quarter of an inch. And that's just that kind of precision can't be duplicated in 2021. So thank you,
sure.
Mama Nabantu. We will certainly be looking for that. Brother Shabaka said some really powerful things in addition. You know, when he says rematriate, in
mm-hmm.
other words, reclaiming Mother Africa, and it
right.
touches on a point, Sister Q, the importance of language. Because what Brother Ofeyemi Grant points out in helping us to get to a blueprint on how to build a African economic cooperative in this century is he looks at the different groups that are contending for power in the world, and what are the most powerful economies and I was looking at a list of the 25 top economies in the world,
mm-hmm.
if I can find that. And it pointed out, for example, I think it's the United States, China.
Mm-hmm.
It's United States, China, Japan, Germany, India, United Kingdom, France, and Italy. That's the top eight. I'm going to stop right there because he also looks at Nigeria, South Africa,
mm-hmm.
Ghana, Jamaica, and trying to understand how it is that these other countries are so dominant on the world stage and these African countries that have comparable populations are so weak in terms of their world influence. And the
mm-hmm.
argument that he's making is he looks at the country, he says, Nigeria, its institutional language is English, Its dominant religion is Islam, and its world power level is low. He looked at South Africa. Its dominant, its institutional language is English and Afrikaans, which is that Dutch language that they brought over. The dominant religion is Christianity, and its power and influence in the world is low. He says Ghana, its institutional language is English. Its religion is Christianity, and its power is very low. And he looked at Jamaica. The dominant, this institutional language is English. Its dominant religion is Christianity, and its world power is very low. Then he looks at China. He says, okay, China as a country, its institutional language is Mandarin. In other words, the Chinese are speaking their own language. Their dominant religion, they don't have a dominant religion, but their philosophy is Confucianism. And their world power level is very high. He looks at the Japanese. He says, Japan is a nation, its institutional language is Japanese. Its dominant religion is Shintoism and Buddhism, and its world power is medium high. He looks at South Korea. Its institutional language is Korean. Its dominant religion is Christianity, and its power level is medium. The argument that he goes on to make is that those countries, those nations that are positioned to exert maximum world influence are countries that are operating from an indigenous institutional language, that is, they have their own language, and an indigenous religion or philosophical system that is native to those people themselves. So in other words, because we as Africans, whether we're in the United States or in the diaspora or on the continent, too often our institutional language is the language of the colonizer, and the religion that has a lot of influence is also the language, the religion of the colonizer. So what Brother Opayami is arguing is that we have to get back to indigenous systems of thinking, in other words, our own philosophy and our own language, because this then brings us the cohesion that we need to move forward as a group, because we're competing against other groups that have very tight language systems and very tight philosophical and religious systems. And Sister Q, I'm sure you're familiar with this, as probably are many of our listeners tonight. The Chinese are spending billions of dollars doing infrastructure on the continent of Africa. Right. And thousands and thousands and thousands of Chinese workers are on the continent building these projects. And the influence of China is so great at this point that Mandarin, the Chinese language, is being required in these African school systems. So just to drive home the point, that when we're talking about exerting global influence around the world, those groups that have their own language and their own philosophical systems are the strongest contenders for global power. So it says to us that we have to take very seriously the notion of being intentionally African, doing our research and finding out our history, and bringing it forward and teaching it to our children so that they come up knowing confidently who they are in the world, that they are geniuses, that all things are possible to them, that anything, that any problem that they can't figure out on the spot, all they have to do is get quiet, get somewhere in a circle, sit down and pray, and the ancestors will speak to them. So we have some very advanced system for doing the work that is in front of us. The only reason that we haven't made greater progress, I would say, to this point, is that we've been a little confused, a little bamboozled about who we are.
Absolutely.
And so we've got to clear up the notion we're not African American. We're not Negro. We're not black. We are African. And we're claiming the very best of African science, African philosophy, ancient African wisdom. We are re-energizing those customs and those rituals. And we're coming together in a group to begin to build our own global African cooperative. And that's what ULU gives us the launching pad to do. $50 will get you into the family as soon as you're able. We're pooling our resources. We're putting $1,000 a piece in to purchase a co-op unit. And as we amass those millions of dollars, we're building institutions that are African to serve our children and future generations. I'll pause there, Sister Q. I think we're just about out of time.
Yeah, we are out of time. Yeah. So, well, you can go ahead and say how people can make the initial contact with ULU, and then we'll close out the program.
Our website, usliftingus1word.com. Us, U-S, liftingus.com. Go to the website. Look carefully at the information that's there, our vision, our mission statement, the plan. And if it makes sense to you, then hit the join button and start the process of becoming a member in Us Lifting Us. The world is waiting for a cooperative economic model. Capitalism is exhausted. It's turned in on itself. It's irrational, and now it's extremely dangerous, even to the people who are trying to hold on to it. We don't have to worry about that. Our challenge is to build the global African cooperative economic model with ourselves and to really take the world in the direction of sanity and peace. We are more than able to do this, and that is our charge, and all we need is like-minded people to join with us, and let's run. Thank you, Sister Q.
Thank you, Brother Ankti. And we want to thank everyone for joining us this evening, for calling in, making your comments and questions. We'll be back next Thursday evening at 9 p.m., with another installment of Dare to Win. We hope you'll join us then. Thank you. Peace.
Peace.
You will find love, 'cause love is the only way. ablaze in my days.